Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming to you on your speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm Jackie from Houston, and I have Rahul here from Connecticut, but we also have a very unique perspective from a guest today, and that is my brother, but unfortunately also a Liverpool fan. Let's welcome Narain, the self-proclaimed Premier Chelsea number one fan. Narain, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, super excited to be here. Only took me about 14 hours to drive here from the state of Iowa, so super excited to be here. Like Jackie said, self-proclaimed TPC fan or number one fan. But yes, absolutely a Liverpool fan, but super excited to be on the podcast, guys. I've loved listening to you over the past year now, I believe. So yeah, excited to join the pod.
Well, welcome. We're happy to have you. Rahul, I think he's going to join us today for the full segment. We're going to talk Chelsea, of course, and then we'll dive into a little more action with Liverpool. But why don't you take us through the starting 11 that played today?
Before I do that, I just want to welcome him officially, and I think maybe we can crown him the number one fan just based on the 14-hour drive.
There you go, yeah.
But yeah, our game against Wolves actually did happen, even though there's a lot of rumors and speculation that it may not. We were able to field 11 players, which was a blessing in itself, and these were the 11 that we picked. So Mendy in goal, Aspi, Thiago Silva, Rudiger, Reece James, N'Golo Kante coming back, Chalobah in midfield, Marcus Alonso, and then the front three, which was basically the same from the Everton game, Mason Mount, Hakim Ziyech, and Pulisic in a false nine.
Yeah, great to see N'Golo Kante back. Surprised to see him back, but at the same time, excited to have him back there. A little bit of a surprise to see Trevor Chalobah back in the middle of the park there. I guess we're just running super duper light in the midfield these days, and so Tuchel's got to do what he's got to do. Narain, from your perspective, are there any Chelsea fans or Chelsea players, I mean, that stand out to you that should be in the starting lineup?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it and Rahul mentioned it as well, you know, and I was asking, you know, Jackie right before the game, you know, where is Ziyech or I'm sorry, where is
Kai Havertz?
Kai Havertz, yep. And all the COVID issues as well. So probably the one I was expecting to see, Lukaku with a similar, you know, issue as well. So I think this is probably the strongest lineup he could have put out. And obviously you guys are not only dealing with COVID issues, but also with, you know, injuries as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's been tough because we had injuries. Now some of our injured players who were coming back, Lukaku, Timo Werner, have picked up the, or at least tested positive. And so now they've got to be out for 10 days. And similar to Liverpool, and Narain, we'll touch on that when we get to them, they're experiencing similar issues. But for us, it just adds to the misery, really, because we were light in midfield. Now we've had Jorginho, who's maybe tested positive, maybe not. Loftus-Cheek was out. And so we've had to rush back Kante, Kovacic, and Chalobah, who was injured himself and comes back and plays in midfield. So I can understand the frustration from Tuchel, who shared before the game that, you know, we requested the game to be postponed and the Premier League said, no, you've got 14 players and so the game must go on. But really, it's not 14 players because three of those or even four of those are just coming back from injury.
Yeah, it's a tough one to swallow, right? Because you look at some of the other games that were canceled, you kind of wonder what Chelsea had to do to get the game canceled. And look, let me be very honest. I think I'm not advocating that our games be canceled because we do have a big squad. Yes, we've struggled with injuries. Yes, people have gone out with COVID. But Raul, I think we'll get into the details of this whole issue here. But from my perspective, I think the team that Tuchel put out is a strong team nonetheless. And so I'm expecting results. But let's put that to the side for a second. A couple of other games were canceled. And so I know Tuchel actually made an official notice or complaint or statement, maybe that's a fair word, saying they're going to take this up afterwards to wonder why this exactly happened.
Yeah, it comes back to, you know, 14 players available. The Premier League says you play this game, right? And that's fine. But Jorginho, who apparently traveled with the squad, first tested negative, then tested positive, then tested negative. And so they decided, you know, it's not safe for not just the players, but the Wolves players that are on the pitch and the right fans that are there, the referees. Chelsea decided and took the action proactively to say, Jorginho, no, you sit this one out. Similar to what they did with Kai Havertz in the Everton game. He was negative. He's now tested positive. And I think part of the frustration is they're taking these rapid tests, or as Tuchel referred to as flow tests, that say one thing, and then they do the PCR test and they say a different thing. And so there's some confusion around which one is right, which one isn't right. And he said, my players are confused too. And we woke them up today, this morning, for the game at 8:30 and said, let's go get tested.
Yeah.
Very well knowing that a rapid test 2 hours later could say someone is negative when they're positive, or the other way around. So it's just confusion. And I think to avoid all of that confusion and maintain safety, I think at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. It's not just Chelsea don't want to play this game. It's well more about the safety. Tuchel himself could pick it up and not know. And so I think that's where the issue with the Premier League comes up. And I understand Premier League wants games to go on, but there's no point having one game and then subsequently having Chelsea miss 3 or 4 games because they didn't contain the spread.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk more about it in the Liverpool game as we'll get Nurin's perspective. But you talk about Tottenham, who got a long break.
Right.
Versus Liverpool, who didn't. So we'll pause on those comments there for just a second. Let's jump into that first half for a few minutes. Rahul, do you have a few key moments you can share with us?
I personally didn't watch the first half because I myself was in line to get tested. But I was getting messages from you. I was seeing the notifications pop up, and it seems like we were not as good as we were in the second. We started off a little bit slower. The fog was playing its part. And Wolves, of course, at home, you'd expect them to start off very well, and they did. They score. It's offsides, luckily for us, because if they go one up that early in that game, it ends a whole lot differently than it did. So thank God for VAR. Thank God for the referees who decided and saw what it was. And then I think we kind of just managed the game from that point on, at least in the first half, and then we'll get into the second half. But at the end of that first half, Chalobah comes off injured, and you can't make this stuff up. It's one thing after another, and on comes Saul for the second half.
So before we kind of jump into the second half, a couple of key things there. You sound like Jurgen Klopp with the fog excuse over there.
I'm trying to cater to our guest.
I was going
to
say maybe you're getting some motivation from our guest today, but I'll bring our guest in for the conversation. VAR, it's a heavily debated thing. You've actually asked some questions about VAR on this podcast. Give us your thoughts on VAR in general, not specific to this game.
Yeah, just to say, I think you have both hit the nail on the head across the conversation with the injuries and all that. But yeah, VAR, I personally have an issue with it. When we kind of heard when it was coming together, I'm super excited about it. Help us figure out if the decision was obviously incorrect. We thought it would obviously benefit the referee over the last couple of weeks. And I think I've texted you both either together or separately. It seems like they're just sticking with the referee's decisions, which, it's there to obviously correct that if it's a, obvious error. So overall, in the last couple of weeks, I think my perspective of it is just confusing. At the end of the day, it just still feels like an opinion, or the VAR official's opinion. I won't jump into it. Obviously, we're talking about Chelsea, but I probably have some stronger thoughts about the Liverpool game today, considering VAR. But yeah, little overall, I think just frustration.
Yeah, and Rahul, you and I have echoed those VAR comments back and forth. However, with today in mind, I think we can be a fan of VAR, at least for this particular segment. Because going back to Chelsea and bring the focus back there, 1-0 down in that first half, the Chelsea of December, it then kind of spirals out of control. Now, it doesn't end in a win, as we'll talk about as we go through this. However, 1-0 down, I just don't see the way we're digging ourselves out of that one.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not because we can't. I think it's just come down to the odds are almost getting stacked against us with injuries, with COVID. And we're not making excuses, just listing some of the reasons that players aren't mentally getting over the hurdle. And obviously the whole issue with, December, I'm sure they don't think of it that way. But I'm sure they look back a year ago and we were going through a similar, run of games and results. And that could be playing on their mind as well. So there's a few things happening here, but when I compare last year to this year, we're not losing games like we would have last year. That's not a comparison between Lampard or Tuchel. I think it's just different systems, different mentalities in terms of players saying, okay, we're not going to win this, but let's not try to lose it. And you saw that today. We put in a good shift. Yes, the first half was a little bit slower than we expected, but we put in a good shift. Conte coming back in makes a whole world of difference. And that man plays like he did after just being out for a month. Imagine what he'll do when he's fully fit.
Yeah, and you know, they talk a lot about N'Golo Kanté, Raul. I think Tuchel said this, or some of the other people or managers or players around him, is when N'Golo Kanté is fit, he has to play. It really brings down to the fact that he's almost like two or three men within one. The energy he brings to the squad, the attacking momentum, which is an interesting comment in itself, right? Because when you traditionally think about N'Golo Kanté, yes, he's one of the best midfielders in the world, but he's typically built his skill set on being destructive or being more in that defensive third, playing closer to our defenders and helping break up play. But somewhere along the lines, when Mauricio Sarri came into the team, he found a way to bring him a little more into the attack. And a lot of other managers since, of course, Frank and now Tuchel, have decided to kind of use his energy in attack. And he doesn't always score a goal, doesn't always assist, but just having him disrupt that final third now facing the opponent side seems to pay off for Chelsea.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that you brought up the attacking side, because we always talk about, oh, he makes a difference in the defense. And yes, he does. But you saw in that second, and I think we're getting into the second half You saw in that second half, he was one of the driving forces, so much so that when Ziyech goes off, another injury, we bring Kovacic on, and that allows Kanté a little bit more freedom to go and attack and really drive with the ball, which I think ultimately attracts defenders. If Kanté can release that ball sooner to maybe someone on the wing or someone even running ahead of him, I think he'll get double or triple the assists that he ends up getting in the season. It's not going to be a lot, but at least for a player like Kanté, that's contributing more than everything else that he does, which I'm not saying isn't enough.
Yeah.
But in games where we need maybe just one goal or a moment, and we're almost relying on him today to provide that, that would have been great to see.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about Kanté, and I want to move on, but I want to give him a little more praise on the fact that we've struggled so far in December. It's been evident. We've talked about it. But today we keep a clean sheet. Is that clean sheet because Trevor Chalobah is back in? Is that clean sheet because Azpilicueta is back in? Or is it because N'Golo Kanté runs with the ball so much he gets to keep it out of the opponent's hands or feet in this case?
It's the fog.
Okay, you're
good. No, I'm just kidding. I think it was a collective effort. Obviously, Kanté does a lot to it. And it was great. First clean sheet since Leicester away, which was a month ago. So that in itself, I think, is a win, and we'll take it and go away and say, well, we're headed in the right direction, a goal in Wolves' net, and we win this, but wasn't meant to be, and I'm not going to complain too much. I know we put up a post on our Instagram saying this is the difference between a title and a top four, but you sit back and you think of everything that we've listed with the issues going on, and you say, a point away to Wolves isn't a bad result, and Tuchel himself said that. I think the issue comes with Burnley, Manchester United at home, that some of the points that we've dropped are where the main issue lies.
Yeah, so before we move on from this segment, Rahul, about Chelsea, I'll talk about a couple more items, two points that I want to bring up. One is Tuchel himself. He did say that he was happy or happier with the performance. Maybe that's a clearer way to say that. And so having that clean sheet, I think, is very important to Tuchel, because as much as he says, no, Chelsea's not built on clean sheets, yada, 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 I think that's the foundation for him to then go fix another problem, right? You can't have us not firing in the front and leaking goals in the back. If you stop the leaking goals, he can focus the front. So I think that's a key moment. And the other one I want to talk about is Narain. And I want to get a general perspective on this topic here. It's Antonio Rudiger. He comes out at the end of the game and they asked him, clean sheet, are you happy with that? He says, we should win the game. He goes, where's a clean sheet? He said, I'll concede goals if I win the game. And so that's the mentality we've talked about here. And you've heard a lot about the contract saga and things like that. Give us your perspective on Antonio Rudiger.
Yeah, I think he's a phenomenal defender. You know, we've again had, you know, conversations offline as well. I think he is, you know, kind of becoming that backbone of the Chelsea defense. It's awesome. You know, I'm a huge fan of a young talent as well. It's great to see, you know, young players like Chalobah coming in. And it's players like that that help them, you know, advance a little faster. Obviously, I think you guys have, you know, said the praise about somebody like Thiago Silva, but Rudiger is, you know, that kind of backbone, I feel, you know, also the best availability. You know, he's consistently kind of been there as well. True. So that's just something to keep in mind as well. Coming into, yeah, absolutely. I'll knock on wood for you guys, because, you know, however this title race goes, you kind of want to beat the best. And right now, I think he's kind of up there with, you know, being one of the best center backs. And You know, contract money, I don't want to speculate too much about that. You know, it seems like a lot of money to pay a center back. But, you know, Liverpool are dealing with their own issues with, you know, with what some people say is the world's best player right now, Mohamed Salah. And, you know, we're keeping those wallets pretty tight right now.
We'll get into the world's greatest player in a few minutes here, Rahul. But your quick thoughts on Rudiger. I think, again, another consistent performance from him. Nice words to hear from him at the end saying, we should be winning that game. I'll concede a goal if I win. Nareem's touched on the mentality for what he brings to young players. What more can you say about Tony Rudiger?
Not much. I mean, we've covered him for a whole year now, especially under Tuchel, and he's a whole different player to what we saw this time last year. We were barely seeing him in the first 11. So it's a credit to him to make that comeback and demand that 400K that we've spoken about in the past. And rumors that he's about to leave for Madrid, which a good signing for them, especially on a free. If Chelsea decide not to pay it, I think I would understand that. I wouldn't come here and complain. Maybe I would in about a month. Don't hold me to that. But no, he's a great player. He's showing it. If he wants to stay, we're more than happy to help him. I mean, have him here. If not, then good luck to him. We're Chelsea, and players have come and gone, and we win Champions Leagues.
Well said. Look, I want to talk about Spurs-Liverpool, but one more thing popped into my mind during this segment. Rahul, you have an evil knack for predicting draws and these things, and you've got a lot of flack on social media for predicting these draws. Have you got some juju, some power coming from the future? Can you predict a win for us next time around?
Yeah, apparently I jinx us.
Yeah,
it's the influence I have, I guess. So the next time around, whenever our game is, if it's Wednesday night, I will predict a win just to satisfy some of our followers on Instagram. I'm still getting messages here about my predictions and how I'm bringing these things into existence. So look, I was just being realistic, and I explained it to you on the podcast last time around. Wolves haven't conceded much, beating even the games that they won by one goal, losing to Liverpool and Man City by one. So looking at that and looking where we were, it almost seemed like a draw was the right result. A 1-1 is logical. What I predicted, right? I guess I can't be too real on here. I have to be optimistic like you were.
Look, I'll take that for now. But if you continue to predict draws, we're going to have a problem. At least they're not losses. I'll take that for now. Look, let's talk about Spurs-Liverpool. That's why we have Nareem on today. It is a big, massive clash. Antonio Conte, a fiery personality, coming against Jurgen Klopp, another fiery personality. Nareem, why don't you do us the honors and take us through the starting 11?
Yeah, I would love that. I just hope I could do it justice, like, you know, you and Rahul, when you're going through the Chelsea lineup. So, you know, back four kind of sets itself from the last game as well. You know, Virgil van Dijk still out with COVID issues. So Robertson, a left back, Konate and Matip, you know, pretty solid in the center back positions. I'm super happy we kind of picked him up, obviously. Trent Alexander-Arnold picks himself. Alisson, you know, I kind of think he's the best goalkeeper in the world. Again, that's my bias preview a little bit. Top front three.
You can't say that on.
we'll get into that. I think I'm kind of pre-preparing for the questions I'm anticipating from you, Rahul. You know, the front three picks itself as well. You know, Sadio Mane up front, Jota down the middle with Firmino still out, Salah. And this was where the big surprise came. I mean, I think maybe a couple hours before the game as well, with Rahul, exactly like you said, for Chelsea, a lot of COVID scares for Liverpool as early as this morning. Thiago tested positive. You know, hopefully I'm getting those facts right. And it sounded like Jordan Henderson was an illness. So he drops off as well. Luckily we have, you know, Mr. Reliable, James Milner, 35 and still charging. Young Tyler Morton, I was excited to see him get his full debut. And, you know, Naby Keita, who, again, I'm going to knock on wood for us this time. You know, it's been pretty consistently being used as a sub. So that was the lineup for us today.
Look, it's a strong lineup, Rahul. A couple of things that I'll ask Nareem first, and I'll get your input on. Konate, a lot of, you know, news surrounding him last summer. Liverpool pick him up for a good, decent price, at least in this market. Started off slow, but seems to be a really good signing. What are your opinions on Konate so far?
Yeah, I'm not sure if a lot of Liverpool fans will agree with me, but I love the way Jurgen integrates players. I think we've seen this across the 5 years. Rahul, this is where I'll, you know, kind of take another stab that I'm the number one fan. I loved you going back a long time ago, you know, saying that, bringing on players quickly, right? Or you know, in relationship to Chelsea with the Timo Werners and Ziyech's, you know, when you pay those high price tags, you know, it's almost like you want to, you know, play them and they should have the immediate impact, right? Werner was banging in goals. Right. We've seen that across the board with Keita, right? With, you know, Konate specifically. He's not quick to drop them into the lineup. He wants them to obviously get comfortable, not only with the City, you know, new players, new teams, but the style of play, that heavy metal, that quick pace, you know, being able to join an attack, but also come back as well. And I think the last couple of games where he's gotten a start, even when he's come on as a sub, I know he's played a couple of times in Champions League, he's looked really solid. And like Jackie said as well, with pretty comparable price, or a pretty fair price in today's market, I would think. And yeah, I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, nicely said on the Konate thing. Rahola Milner, 35. Thiago Silva aging like a fine wine. Milner, is he aging like a tequila or a bottle of whiskey or something back in Liverpool?
Hey, he's definitely aging like one of those things you mentioned. I can't really pinpoint what it is, because I'm sure he doesn't drink any of that, hence why he's performing at that age. But no, he's been a mainstay in the Premier League. I think Aston Villa, if I'm not wrong. Man City, Liverpool. So he's been around and he's doing the business. And I think for Jurgen Klopp, he's a great asset. And Naren can definitely speak to that. But whenever there's an issue, wherever there's an issue on the pitch, drop Milner in there and it's fine.
Yeah, and it's nice to have a handy player like that. Look, before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the game, let's look at the Tottenham lineup. I'll run through it very, very quickly. Conte playing a 5-3-2. Almost, I'm sure that would be a little more fluid as and when they were attacking. But in goal, of course, Hugo Lloris, speaking of somebody who's been there, done that for a long time. He's been with Spurs for a long time. Emerson Royale at right wing back. Rahul, I know you have a soft spot for Emerson Royale. Davinson Sanchez, Eric Dier, Ben Davies, and Ryan Sessegnon in left wing back or left back. The three in midfield is in Ndombele, Harry Winks, and Dele Alli coming back from the dead. Up front, of course, Harry Kane and Son. And I made a joke on Emerson Royale. I know he's not your favorite player, but had to throw that in there. What do you make of that starting lineup from Conte? I know you want to talk a little bit about the tactics, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, a strong lineup. I think after being 2 weeks off, he definitely had the time to work on what he was going to do for this game and having players fit and ready to go and knowing exactly what they wanted to do. I think they started off like a house on fire could have been maybe three up in the first 30 minutes, which obviously plays a little bit into what Liverpool were doing with the high line. But Tottenham were ready for it, and Son and Kane and Dele Alli just running through Liverpool, I think was good to see, because for us, we had obviously dropped points and we wanted Liverpool to drop points too. So it was good, and it was an entertaining game as a neutral. At the end of the day, it was a game that you want to see. That's what makes a Premier League and two good teams. And you always know that no matter how under pressure Liverpool are, they're going to go up the other way and score a goal from anywhere. And they did that. And that, I think, deflated a little bit of Spurs' morale or hope, not to say that they were demoralized, but I think they realized that they were in a match and it turned out to be a good game.
Yeah, and you covered the three quick-fire attempts in the first 30 minutes. I think Harry Kane may have had two or three of them himself, maybe.
Yeah.
And on another day, on another night, maybe a more positive Harry Kane, it could have been disastrous, actually. But what are your thoughts, Naren, on the first 30 minutes here, where, of course, Liverpool were good, but Spurs were equally good on the counterattack, equally fast-paced. Rahul's covered the high line that Liverpool were playing. What do you make of those first few minutes in the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit it on the head. You know, Spurs were ready for it. I think over the last few weeks, we've started to see, you know, Antonio Conte really kind of take control of the team from what we've seen in Nuno, more aggressive, taking it, you know, to the opposition. They also, you know, are playing at home, you know, London Stadium, you know, packed, everything going on. Not making excuses to 14 days, you know, maybe a time to figure out tactics, you know, COVID scare kind of on the Liverpool side of things as well. But yeah, I mean, overall, I thought they were ready for the challenge. You know, I know Alisson made a couple big saves right up to even leading to the Harry Kane goal as well. You know, he kind of had that kind of back flick, back turn, and he was right there, you know, with his big chest as well. So yeah, they just started fast. And again, I think overall, they were just ready for the game.
Rahul, Harry Kane scores what's a typical Harry Kane goal, at least the Harry Kane that we are familiar with over season, hasn't done it so much this year. What did you make of that situation? How did he finally click for Harry Kane before this all played out?
I mean, I think, you know, it may have started 2 weeks ago when they initially, or even when Conte came in about 6 weeks ago at this point. He must have given him the confidence and told him, I like you and I want you to stay and all that stuff, you know, that you got to do and manage his ego. And it hasn't happened. But in this game, like Narain said, he could have had three or four in the first half. He made a great run for his goal between Robertson and Konate, and credit to Ndombele for finding him. And he finishes it off in typical Harry Kane form or style. And that's what you want to see, at least I want to see for my fantasy team, because he's been missing. And he's one of those pieces in the Premier League over the last 10 years, 8 years, who's consistently delivered. And yes, he had his old saga thing with Man City this past summer, but there's a player in there, there's a talent in there, and they seem to be unlocking it. He could have scored a bunch more, which is where I think the criticism would be, is he's still not back to his best, but he's getting there and he's delivering for Tottenham as he always does. And for Conte, that's a great thing, because they seem to be still conceding goals, which was an issue under Nuno. At least they're scoring goals on the other end and getting points out of games instead of just losing them.
Yeah, and you talked about Harry Kane, right, and how Conte has done well to help him get some confidence. He's got this goal. He got a couple of goals a few weeks ago before all of this went down. I want to talk about the two-week break, but just in a few seconds here. Harry Kane's been doing it for 8 or 10 years, but a man that's been doing it for the last 2 years or so, Jota, a name that's become synonymous with the goal when you need a goal. What's your thoughts on this man and how he's been performing for Liverpool?
Yeah, absolutely incredible. You know, when we first purchased him, I think a lot of the talk was, wait, who, this guy, you know, versus Raul Jimenez, you know, guilty as charged for that as well. 40 plus million, kind of a scary tag, you know, for a player when you have the likes of Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Firmino, where you think, you know, number nine's got, you know, he's not getting replaced anytime soon. And it's almost at this point, I think he's put himself right there. I mean, he might be the second name on the list right behind Mohamed Salah. So absolute bang for the money for sure. His movement, you know, his availability, his strength. I think he's just been overall exactly what Liverpool needed, you know, a different change. You know, you get that with Bobby Firmino, he kind of holds up play, and Jota is just, you know, heavy metal right through and through. So great signing for us. And yeah, coming up with the goods week over week at this point for us, and definitely needed today, because, you know, Rahul, like you said, and Jackie, like you said, Tottenham just we're doing really well so far in that game.
And Rahul, Jota last season dragged me to the top of the Fantasy Premier League. This season, it seems that he's doing the same for you at this point in time. So what more praise than you and I have been keeping him in the Fantasy League for the last couple of years here. So he's doing really, really well. But I want to come back and talk about the 2 weeks. We wanted to cover that as well. Chelsea applied for a postponement, obviously got denied. We covered that for a few minutes. How does Tottenham get away with the 2 weeks? How does the rest of the Premier League feel about the fact that they didn't have to play for 2 weeks? Liverpool had to then prepare, play games in between, and then show up to play this particular match.
Yeah, if I'm not wrong, I think Spurs were the first club to have the outbreak or issues starting with the COVID current issues that we're seeing everywhere in England. And so I think that may have been the driving force for the Premier League to say, if we can contain it here, maybe we can prevent it from spreading. And they tried it. And I think Spurs canceled one game, canceled another game, canceled a game in Europe. And I think eventually UEFA told them, we're going to knock you out of the tournament because we don't have time to play it. And it turned out 2 weeks went by and they got people healthy. They got people ready mentally, physically. And yes, we're not saying they just went on vacation for 2 weeks. There were players in there that tested positive that had to be out for 10 weeks. And that in itself is stressful, not just for the player, but for the family. So don't want to sound insensitive to that. But the reality is that they've had 2 weeks and they've had the time to prepare, and going into this busy fixture period, which we all know is just one game after another, they've had a break, which sets them up pretty well, and they come out and do well against Liverpool. And on another night, they win this game and show that, you know, the two-week break has been exactly what they needed.
Yeah, I mean, it still comes back to the fact that you've talked about a Liverpool struggling with issues, Chelsea struggling with issues, obviously other teams, but look, at the end of the day, it is what it is. They got that opportunity. And I think credit to Conte and the team, you've got to take the silver linings where you can find them. And so if you've got the good hand of getting those 2 weeks off, prepare for it, do what you need to. And then after that, hopefully you can kind of build off from then. You know, Conte is going to build off from there. But before we go too much into Conte, that first half continues, Rahul, and Harry Kane has a moment of madness. Now, I am going to say completely independent here, but I'd like for you two to debate, just for the fun of this, pro sending off, and you can be anti sending off, Rahul, and we'll start from this. Noreen, tell us what your thoughts were on this issue with Harry Kane's sliding tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is funny. I feel like this question was coming. I anticipated it. So I want to take off my Liverpool hat, hypothetically, put on my unbiased, you know, TPC hat for you guys. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. When studs are raised, you know, going into the player's shin, I believe that's a red card. I agree with his comments after. I don't think it was a malicious tackle in a you know, pretty massive game, you know, where they're trying to sneak in the top four. Liverpool are trying to obviously keep on the tails of Man City. I don't see it any other way. You know, I think studs up coming at a player, I think it's a red card. And that's my unbiased opinion. Rahul?
First of all, I don't know why you put me in this position because I do agree that it was a red card, but I guess if I have to argue against it, and hopefully now that I'm kind of a target man on our Instagram, people aren't going to listen to this and be like, well, he also supports Tottenham. I guess I got to go back to what Harry Kane said. The intent wasn't to hurt. The intent was to win the ball. And honestly, in that period of the game, I think it was it right before or after the Liverpool goal, Naren?
I think it was right after their goal. I think it was in the 19th minute before Jota actually got the equalizer.
Okay, so the point was that they were feeling, you know, the adrenaline rushing through, and they wanted to get everything, and they wanted to win every tackle and every ball. And I think in doing that, he thought there was something there to get to the ball first. Clearly, he misread it. And on NBC, they were saying, well, his reputation goes for him, but it shouldn't. And I guess now I'm arguing against myself here. It shouldn't have. And it doesn't matter who it is. If he, like Naren said, if those studs are up and he's caught him, and if his leg's planted on the foot, Robertson, he's breaking that leg. And so in player safety, and I think in more to the point of being consistent, we saw, I think Pogba did something similar to Keita in the game a few months ago, and he got a straight red. And Kane doesn't, I think he only got a yellow maybe.
Yeah.
So the consistency lacks, and that's where VAR comes in and says absolutely nothing. So it's like VAR needs VAR. But to go against Naren, I think he didn't mean it. So that's where we'll leave it.
Yep.
Well, I just wanted to add something really quick. Sorry, Jackie. I agree with you, Rahul. I think reputation maybe played a little bit of part with it as well. I'm sure we'll get to the, you know, the actual red card in this game as well. And I agree with you, consistency, right? And it kind of goes back to my overall, you know, kind of how I left the VAR question earlier in the podcast was frustration.
Right.
Why wasn't it checked, right? And you're 100% kind of taking my you know, Liverpool hat off again. My immediate thought goes to player safety. And I thought he was endangering a player.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on, Rahul. Do you have any key moments we need to discuss next that we can run through at this point?
Well, the red card was one of them. I guess there was another one. I think it was in the first half. Naren, if I'm wrong, please correct me. But there was a shove or some tackle, if you want to call it that, on Jota in the box from... Was it Sanchez? No, it wasn't Sanchez. I think it was Ndombele. And he comes in and Jota is about to pull the trigger and take the shot. And all of a sudden, he's on the ground and they're asking for a penalty. It's not given. And I think I texted you guys and I said that has to be a penalty because he was about to shoot the ball and he's clearly taken out. So just wanted to get Naren's thoughts on that.
Yeah, again, you know, I think for Liverpool, I would say it's a penalty for sure. I honestly would think if it was Tottenham the other way, you know, if I'm seeing Matip or Trent Alexander-Arnold, anyone, I mean, aggressively kind of shoving a player, you'd want that penalty. And I think you're right, you know, actively about to take the shot, you know, in that position. So I don't know if we need to touch on it too much longer, but it's definitely a penalty in my opinion.
Yeah, it's another tough one, right, guys? Because if Liverpool get that one, it moves the game a little bit further and out of Tottenham's hands. And you almost wonder where Conte goes from there. He's got away with the red card, got away with a penalty issue. We'll talk about some refereeing and towards the end, Rahul, some stuff that came up on the TPC page about refereeing and Jurgen Klopp. We'll get to that in just a minute. But let's talk a little bit about the red card. Do you know exactly what happened in that moment for that specific red card?
For the Andrew Robertson red card?
Yep.
Yeah. I think he kind of was, again, he had scored the goal to send us 2-1 up and, you know, was super excited, fired up. Scotland's captain, you know, we love that aggression from him. And again, maybe a little bit too over the top. This is one decision where I might actually agree with it. It did go to VAR. And maybe Rahul, you can kind of, you know, maybe talk me off the ledge. But again, raising the boot pretty high. He did miss the leg. Again, I think he had full intention of getting the ball. But again, I go back to endangering a player, right? If he kind of connects, if he's coming in with that level of intent. I do like that it went to a VAR decision and the referee could make a decision because that's what they're there for. Was it a clear and obvious error? You know, I actually agree with this one. I thought he, you know, deserved to be sent off. And one thing, just a classy, you know, overall player apologizes on Instagram as well and kind of takes full responsibility for the action. So when a player is doing that, you know, kind of hard to argue with him as well.
Yeah, I had to look up who he was fouling or going tough on, and it was my favorite player, Emerson Royale. But I think this one was stupid of Robertson because the ball wasn't going anywhere. I think Royale was trying to control it and make a move with it down on the wing, pretty close to
touchline.
Yeah, pretty close to not going anywhere. And Robertson comes in full force to like clear the ball and clear the man. And it's like you could have come and closed him down and forced him into doing something instead of just trying to wipe him up. Maybe he feels the same way I do about Emerson Royale. But honestly, it was stupid. And like you said, he's come out and apologized and that's fine. But the fact that the referee didn't give it right away in itself is like, what is the referee watching? Because I texted him. I was like, I think that's going to be a red card. And so Robertson, who himself got fouled in the first half, doesn't.
Right.
You know, Kane doesn't get sent off and Robertson gets sent off now. That's the nature of the game.
Yeah, indeed it is. It's a strange one. But, you know, from there, Liverpool's still okay. But then Narain's made some interesting comments about the goalkeeper, Rahul. You've raised your eyebrows a few times. You want to tell me about the Alisson elephant in the room?
Yeah, I mean, look, he was good. But I think your high line consistently exposed him and he pulled off some good saves. Spurs missed some good chances, but this time around he comes out early in anticipation of getting the ball and misses it or deflects back from him to Son, and it's an open net and it's 2-2.
And so your stance has been he's the best goalkeeper on earth. Rahul has just showed his weaknesses. How do you feel about the whole Alisson situation and the goal that happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on. Definitely a mistake. He has to take ownership for that. You know, I go back to being the best goalkeeper in the world because for a long time, I think it obviously helps when you have the best defender in the world. I'm throwing out a lot of best today. You know, missing that pace from Virgil van Dijk. And, you know, we do tend to have obviously attacking fullbacks. So you're absolutely right. The high line and Matip and Konate weren't able to come back to help that situation. But almost a crazy, maybe minute of madness. I think leading up to that, he had a couple times where he cleared the ball super comfortably. Like you mentioned, Rahul, a couple huge saves, a huge save from Harry Kane in the first half before the first goal.
Yeah.
So it was almost, you know, that buildup of he thought he was going to get to everything. He was going to clear everything. You know, he was going to make sure he kind of obviously kept the door shut. And yeah, maybe kind of a lap in focus, you know, and just – honestly, a silly mistake, which at this point, we've kind of seen it a couple times from him, which I know I've listened to your guys' debate about Mendy recently, and obviously going back to the Kepa days, it's concerning, you know, but we'll let him off with this one. Hopefully it doesn't continue overall, because like you mentioned earlier in the game, I mean, if it wasn't for his big chest, his big, you know, big hands, it could have been 2-3 to Spurs before we even got one back.
Rahul, who's the best goalkeeper on the earth?
There's only one answer there. It's Edouard Mendy. I don't even know who this Kepa guy he's talking about. But no, jokes aside, Alisson's a great keeper, but I think he does make a few mistakes every once in a while. And I guess Mendy's made one mistake this month in itself. So I can't be too critical of Alisson. But you mentioned one thing, Naren, which was, when Van Dijk's there, the high line doesn't really seem to be an issue, or at least doesn't get exposed as much. Today he wasn't, and consistently you saw that was Spurs' plan. They just wanted to attack and get in behind.
Yep.
Do you feel after going 2-1 up, there was an opportunity to maybe switch something and maybe just say, guys, just drop back a couple of yards and let's not allow them to run in, because then that forces them to change their plan. And I know the counter argument could be, well, we were doing well with it and we could have gotten a third and it doesn't matter. But how do you feel about that? And do you think there was an opportunity there to make a switch when you're 2-1 up?
Yeah, Raul, I think that's a great question. And again, kind of bringing it back to your fog analogy too, I think you're thinking or should be thinking like Jurgen Klopp, or I would have hoped you would have thought that. In that situation, and as a fan, as a neutral, it's kind of exciting to almost see a team stick to what they know, continue to attack, continue to press, play that heavy metal. But yeah, in a tough game away, tensions, yellow cards, you would hope he would have gone a little bit more defensive counterattack when you have the pace of Robinson, when you have the pace of Alexander-Arnold. So it was disappointing there was no kind of adjustment. But again, as a fan of what he's built, and the type of football we get, credited for, I like that he stick to his guns, but kind of playing devil's advocate as well. I do wish we went a little bit more defensive.
Yeah, good analysis. I'm going to ask Naren this question, Rahul, and we'll move on to something else after that. Based on the entire match you watched, based on how Tottenham lined up, how Liverpool lined up, given everything you know now about Tottenham's 2 weeks, Liverpool's injuries, is a draw a fair result for everybody, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I could be mad about that. Like you said, kind of comes with what's going on in the world. We want player safety. They got 14 days. We didn't, dealing with some COVID issues together. You can pile up the excuses, Rahul, like you mentioned with the Chelsea game as well. But overall, I think, like I mentioned before, starting to see that imprint on Spurs football. I thought they were ready for the game. All the issues aside, they took their chances. And also at the same time, they didn't take their chances. And that gritty spirit of Liverpool to go down, come back, win 2-1 on another day, he doesn't make that mistake and it is a win. Like I said, I'll give him this mistake with a pretty heavy sigh. But yeah, I think 2-2 overall, pretty fair. Overall entertaining game, from a neutral perspective, I believe.
Rahul, something interesting we need to talk about. Naren has called the world's best goalkeeper today in Liverpool. No surprise there. The world's best defender in Liverpool. No surprise there. He's called those two out. But somebody who actually might be one of the world's best, that's Mohamed Salah, was pretty quiet overall today. And I think there's a young man you want to give a little bit of praise to.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan Sessegnon, you mentioned him when you read out the starting 11. Came in for Sergio Reguilón, who's there starting a left back. And obviously, this wasn't all down to Ryan Sessegnon, but he did a number on Mo Salah, who's been absolutely on fire and kept him quiet, which is a task in itself, and not a lot of more developed and at least more established left backs or defenders have done well. So just wanted to give him a shout out. We do recognize here, even though we're the Premier Chels, do recognize rival players and just want to, let them know they're appreciated.
All right, last question I have before we move on from this segment. It's for both of you guys to kind of discuss. Best right wing back.
Oh, man.
Is it Trent? Is it Reece? Who's getting that England number one spot? Rahul, I'll let you go first.
With no bias. With no bias. I'm going to go for Reece James, simply because we saw even in today's game, Trent does get exposed defensively. Now, he does a great job going forward, contributes. He's in my fantasy team. But, just on both sides of the game, because you can't just do one side unless you're Messi or Ronaldo. And for a defender, for a winger, wing back or left or right back, you've got to do the defending. And I think in the big games and in, certainly in some of the other games where if you attack Trent, you can get in behind him, you can get in and possibly create an opportunity. With Reece James, we've seen, and obviously I watch Reece James a lot more closely, but with Reece James, even if he gets beaten, he'll be back there hustling and getting the ball back or getting a throwing or whatever it is, and then going on the other end and scoring a goal or providing an assist. And so if I was building my team, I would put Reece James in there. If I didn't have an option ahead of him, maybe I'd put Trent. That way my right wing would just be set. but if I'm Gareth Southgate, I'm going with Reece James, even though he goes with Kieran Trippier for some reason.
We'll not even get into that. We'll give him a chance here. Noreen, let us know your thoughts on this debate.
Oh my gosh. I think we need another episode for Gareth Southgate. But yeah, absolutely. Rahul, again, fully unbiased. I actually might have to agree with you. But if I can sit on the fence a little bit, I think it depends on the opposition, right? Do we need a little bit more assisting? Do we need a little bit more help? Let's throw in Trent. Do we need, you know, a sturdy, strong beast, you know?
Nice. Kind
of, yeah, absolutely. Kind of, you know, watching the back as well. Hey, ultimately, at the end of the day, two young, you know, pretty hungry, pretty dominant young English players. So, hey, if I'm Gareth Southgate, I mean, that's one and two right there. I don't think you can really make a mistake, but I couldn't agree with you more about his defensive lapse. There's, you know, countless times, not even this season, but last season, you know, where we're like, oh man, you know, gives away the balls, you know, tracking back, you know, and not really being able to catch up to the play, or again, yeah, not even in the question of defense because he's so far up, you know, crossing in the ball. So, yeah, I'd give it to Reece James. I'm really hoping, you know, Virgil van Dijk is staying on Trent, because I think, you know, if he can clean up, you know, those mistakes, you know, being able to just focus a little bit more on defending, you know, he'll be right there. But, you know, England have it pretty set with that position for sure.
They definitely do at the right back and right wing back position. Rahul, do you want to discuss any of some key moments from the remainder of Liverpool season that you would want to kind of bring up over here?
Yeah, since we have Naren on, obviously we want to, you know, we're coming up to the end of the first half of the Premier League season. Yeah. Sitting in second spot, 3 points behind Man City, 3 points ahead of us. Obviously an improvement over last season already. So just wanted to get your thoughts on maybe the rest of the season. We know the African Cup of Nations is coming up, so you're going to be missing two key players. So your thoughts on January and beyond in the Premier League, and then obviously in the Champions League with Inter Milan. And Jackie, we never even touched on the whole two-draw Champions League. But anyway, Naren, your thoughts on maybe just the rest of the season for Liverpool?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so far I'm super happy with where we are at the table. You know, if you had given me this right at the beginning of the season, snapped it up, winners of Champions League or a Champions League group for the first time, first English club, I believe, you know, pretty high up in the Carabao Cup, I believe, right? Playing Leicester in the quarterfinals. Yeah. The FA Cup just got drawn, and I think we have a pretty favorable draw as well. So still in everything, which is awesome. I think you guys mentioned that a couple episodes ago, you know, it's pretty normal for Liverpool to kind of turn off or not show up for the FA Cup or Carabao Cup. So it's pretty exciting to be involved, at least in the quarterfinals. I think the first time Jurgen Klopp has been, you know, to that stage. Yeah, and you know, going back to the question you asked, Rahul, it's going to be a pretty big miss in January. I think, like every other Liverpool fan, I've checked the schedule multiple times—maybe 4, 5, 6. I don't even know how many times. Probably going to that double-digit number. I think they're missing for two Premier League games. So I'm really, really hopeful. And this is me being a little bit of a, you know, Ghanaian fan over an Egyptian fan or a Senegalese fan is, hey, hopefully Ghana makes it a little further than those two countries so they can come back a little faster. But it'll be a huge miss. You know, quality players in Jota and Firmino, excited to see him coming back. So hopefully they can kind of mend that gap. And hey, let's not forget about, you know, probably the man who will have a statue when this is all said and done, and big Dave Walker-Righi.
Nuri, just a question for you on those two players. I know they go away right pretty early in January, but will they be available for our clash on the 2nd?
Yes, I believe they will be. I triple checked that. I believe the African Cup of Nations starts on the 7th of January till I believe the 7th of February. So yes, I really need them for that one because it's not been a good showing in London overall, I feel, this season.
Let's hope the Senegalese and the Egyptian coach are like, come on over. We need you a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Rahul, for us, we can't have our December blues become January nightmares at this point. So let's talk about some other fixtures. It's been good covering Chelsea and Liverpool, but you know, we've talked about this team, Rahul, that's Arsenal, over the last few games here. Heavily criticized early on in the season. Alex was even saying Arsenal relegated, Mikel Arteta out, and 4-1 demolishing Leeds, a Leeds that we struggled to beat.
Look, I mean, Man City beat Leeds 7-0, so I wouldn't get too carried away if I was Arsenal, but you got to beat who's put in front of you, and they definitely did that. Young guys, the young players coming through and making an impression. We haven't touched on the Aubameyang thing yet, but that's in itself debatable, I think, if Arteta is handling it right, especially if he went to attend to his sick mother. But that may be a topic for a different day. I think Arsenal obviously doing well. Finally won an away game, I think, after losing the last three. So a good win for them, and they closed the gap on us, which, like you said, Alex had predicted a relegation fight for them. If that's what they are doing, if they're going to be relegated, I'm worried about us. But we'll see what comes of it in the next few games. Arsenal obviously are a roller coaster, sometimes up and sometimes down.
Yeah, and you know, with regards to the Aubameyang situation, more information will come out in time. But credit then goes to the likes of Martinelli,
right,
Saka, and then Emil Smith Rowe, who are doing the business without some of the senior players, which I think that's kind of the transition Arteta is hoping for, that in the coming seasons, he's got a really solid squad. We've not even talked about Odegaard, Rahul, who came in,
right,
started slow, and is looking like a very, very solid attacking midfielder for them. So a lot of good things in Arsenal. I mean, a lot of positive things coming out of that camp. So good overall. Let's talk a little bit about Manchester City and Newcastle. Now, Manchester City go to Newcastle. I have a lot of players in my fantasy team from Manchester City. They don't even play, and the game finishes 4-0. Allow Naren to speak here on some thoughts about Manchester City.
Yeah, I mean, you guys touched on it a little bit with Chelsea, but depth of squad. I mean, you know, they unfortunately, fortunately, don't have any COVID issues, unlike, you know, Chelsea and Liverpool and some of the other big boys. But, you know, Pep has him firing. I mean, whether it's Riyad Mahrez, I think I was listening to the Robbie and Robbie's podcast, you know, as well, and they were mentioning, I mean, it almost feels like he benches a couple of them to wake them up. You know, Sterling was out of the lineup, comes in, he starts firing. You know, benches Sterling, Mahrez comes in, fires. De Bruyne's been kind of pretty quiet, comes in and, you know, back with the assist. So, I mean, it's just such a well-constructed squad, you know, just depth in every position. I mean, multiple players per position, like Jackie made reference to with his, you know, starting players you would think on any other team,
right,
sitting on the bench for Man City. So, yeah, I mean, they seem to be gelling when some of the other, you know, bigger teams are falling off. You know, the one thing I did also want to mention, I think the fixtures, right, just back to back to back. You know, when the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool are missing players due to COVID, a squad like City's probably is benefiting from that as well, right, with how busy December and the holiday period is as well. So maybe kind of the stars are perfectly aligning for them. Hopefully we don't give them too much of a chance to kind of run away with it. Hopefully December ends, you know, quickly for Chelsea, and, you know, we get our starting center backs and center midfielders back as well. So hopefully we can catch them before it's too late.
Yeah, and guys, one thing that's interesting about Manchester City is Pep manages to keep all these big names quiet, or at least there's no noise coming out of the Manchester City camp. So credit to him there. And Manchester City starts slow usually in the Premier League. In fact, even last season, you almost wondered if they were going to go ahead and win it. But after December, or at least during December, while Chelsea are taking a nap and getting nightmares, you know, Manchester City seemed to kind of oil the engines and just rev and go. And like you guys have both touched on, that huge squad is coming really in handy right now, where I'm not seeing Jack Grealish, Gundogan, Mahrez, you know, you've not even got Kyle Walker playing, and I'm getting 0 points in my fantasy league, but they're getting 4-0 to Newcastle. And look, yes, we know Newcastle's issues, but Manchester City just keeps doing the business with whoever they put out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, that's Manchester City under Pep, and you said they start slow. Their slow is basically winning 5 out of 7.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of what he's built there is like you said, a machine that starts off, and once it gets into the flow around this time of the year, they pull away. And like Naren was saying, I'm afraid that if our team, at least in Chelsea and his team in Liverpool, drop a couple more points, Liverpool sit 3 points behind City and we sit six, could easily be we sit 9, 12 points and Liverpool sit 6 points. And then at that point, City just know how to handle the league and they'll go on and win another 10, 12 games. And at that point, it's like City's league again. So that's the concern, right? We've got to keep close to them and hope that they drop some points. And I know we play them in January, so hopefully that's an opportunity. But City are just too good. And like you've mentioned, the players that they have and what Pep does to keep them alive. And this time they don't even have the Carabao Cup to distract them. So it's going to be an interesting way to see how Liverpool and Chelsea fight or try to get close to them.
So Raul, I know you want to talk about the FA Cup potentially, if that's going to be played or not. But before we jump into that segment and wrap up, let me run really quickly through the Premier League table. It's going to look a little bit interesting, given that some teams have not played all their fixtures. But at the top of the table is Manchester City, 44 points, doing very, very well, like we've just covered. Liverpool in second. The draw today hurts them a little bit, but they're sitting there with 41 points. And then Chelsea continuing to draw in their bad form in third with 38 points. Now, Arsenal, keep an eye on this team, sitting in fourth with 32 points. So I'm not going to cover West Ham and Manchester United. They're sitting in fifth and sixth, but they do have some games in hand. The bottom of the table, again, not much change to report. Norwich sitting there with 10 points. Newcastle sitting in 19th with 10 points. And they actually have a game in hand over Norwich. They've actually played a game. Sorry, Norwich has a game in hand. And Burnley sitting in 18th with 11 points, but they're like three games in hand at this point. So the table at the bottom could get interesting over the next few weeks. So we'll be paying attention to that.
Yeah, and for at least just on Newcastle's point, with the games that they're falling behind and the points that they're falling behind, Championship is looking like a real possibility. And I think for them, they've got a plan or at least do something in January, something major to maybe come out of it. But it's going to be tough for them. So before we move on to the Carabao Cup, just one last piece of Premier League business to discuss is there is going to be a meeting tomorrow between the 20 clubs to discuss maybe postponing a round of fixtures here in the festive period. But that's going to be after the next game week. So we're just done with 18, game week 18. We go into 19, which is on Boxing Day.
Right.
And the suggestion is they cancel the one after Boxing Day, which is the 28th, 29th, and 30th. So if they do that, obviously it helps out, but there's still a game to be played between now and then. So I'm almost wondering why they don't look at canceling maybe 19, but maybe it's Boxing Day and that's something that's traditional and they can't get through. So we'll definitely keep an eye out for it and see what the result of it is and put it up on our Instagram and we can engage with our followers there. But coming to Carabao Cup, Naren touched on it. Liverpool play Leicester. We go away to Brentford. But usually we do predictions and we say who's going to play and who, what's going to happen. But we don't know the way things are going every day, every hour. This could very well be postponed or even canceled. So I don't know if there's a point of us doing a whole prediction. So what we can say is if, you know, as we get closer and if we know the game's going to happen, we'll put up our predictions on Instagram and I will predict a win this time around. But Naren, is this, I guess, just since we have you here, is this a trophy that, you know, if it's the only trophy you guys win this year, is that something you'll be happy with?
Full transparency, I don't think so. Jurgen has just set up the club over the last 5 years to be competing with the likes of Chelsea, Champions League winners, right, of last year with Man City. We won the title a couple years ago. So, yeah, hey, at the end of the day, for the young players, since those are the ones who are kind of getting us to those final stages, it's great experience. So it comes as a win, you know, secondary, you know, benefits as well. Obviously, the monetary gain, not as big as the Premier League. It's a trophy in the cabinet, but I'd have to say no. Maybe if it's the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup, you know, we can kind of sneak it as a good season. But look, Rahul, you mentioned it, and overall, it's going to be a tough season. It's going to be a long season, and for the likes of, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea, I believe Mendy will be missing as well for the Cup of Nations. It's just kind of another, you know, another excuse, another, you know, kind of roadblock potentially for us keeping on City's tail. So hopefully we can win, you know, both of us. Maybe we'll see each other in the finals of that competition. That'd be great. Maybe I'll have to drive down to Houston again for that one. But yeah, I mean, it's something that I would like them to win, but I don't think it'd be a successful season if that was just the only trophy we locked down.
Bro, these Liverpool fans getting greedy these days, man. Yeah. 2004, we won the first Carabao Cup for a long, long time, and we were very, very excited. But look, no, in all seriousness, I think if it's a Chelsea-Liverpool final, it's going to be an exciting one. If we get that far, of course, we have to play the next game and see if we even play the next game. But fun times, and of course, if Chelsea were to win that tournament, I'd be happy with something local as well.
I agree, and yes, the Carabao Cup isn't as big, but we haven't won it in a long time, so...
Yeah.
And it sets you up for the rest of the season. So we'll definitely...
Silverware, I guess, right?
Yeah, right. And if it's the only thing we win, it's going to be as big as the Champions League.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, but no, I think we've all got our sights set on bigger things. But like you said, we don't know what happens with the next day, let alone the next few months. So we wish not just Chelsea players, but Liverpool and every other club that's been affected by the COVID outbreak a positive and speedy recovery, and we hope that we get our festive fixtures, even if it's just one of them on Boxing Day. And Naren, we'd like to thank you very much for making the drive down. Obviously, it's not just for this episode, but hopefully you two will get to spend the holidays together, and you can jump back on before you head back home. And that will be after a Chelsea win versus Liverpool.
All right. I appreciate it. And thank you guys so much for having me. Obviously a little bit biased because it's my brother and, you know, one of my best friends as well, but I just love listening to you guys, you know, week over week. I think you do such a fantastic job. And then again, you know, kind of, obviously, you know, you are Chelsea fans first, but kind of an unbiased look. I think you've given a lot of love to Liverpool in the last year. You've given a lot of love to Man City as well. And, you know, I appreciate you also kind of, you know, helping us recognize the middle of the table and some of those, you know, in the relegation zone as well. So, yeah, love the podcast. So keep it coming, you know, definitely without me.
All right, Jackie, any parting thoughts before we head out? Must be a special episode to have your brother right here.
Yeah, look, you've covered a few interesting things with COVID and what's going on in the world. I think it's good to be able to spend, you know, the holidays with friends and family. And just, if we get a great game to watch, lovely. If not, we'll just continue doing the podcast, having a good time talking about football.
Yes, and there's always FIFA. So thank you very much for listening, guys. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us. It's at the Premier Chelsea on Google, Apple, Spotify, and Instagram. And it's Twitter at Premier Chelsea. And as always, send us your feedback. If you'd like to join us on the podcast like Naren did, send us a message and we can try to set that up. But until then, stay safe. Happy holidays here. And we will be back, hopefully during a Brentford review. If not, we'll definitely look forward to Villa. But until then, stay safe and up the Chelsea.